Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, now offering a fall look-back option that will add 50 cents per bushel to your revenue claim. Details at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the March 7 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Daryl Good, ag economist at the U of I, is in studio to take a look at the marketplace and how it has been playing out for the 2014 year so far and what might be ahead for commodity prices, corn and soybeans in particular. Daryl, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Let's start with corn. Interesting factors playing into the marketplace on the global front. Can you lay out the market as you see it?
Well, we've experienced a very nice run-up in corn prices really since the first of the year, initially triggered, I think, by the December 1 stocks report released in the second week of January. And we got a nice bounce off of that. Prices then flattened out a bit and then more recently have moved higher, I think, basically because of very strong export sales of U.S. corn. We continue to see nice weekly sales, good shipments on a weekly basis. And then the last ingredient that has come into that market, of course, is the Russian-Ukrainian situation, which some have interpreted as maybe interrupting exports of grain from that part of the world and shifting some demand to other places, including the U.S. And that might tighten up our balance sheet here for old crop corn. And certainly the market has reflected that in the last few days, prices moving sharply higher. And so here we sat with much stronger demand than we thought we would have for corn this year, prospects for smaller ending stocks than we thought we would have, and now some uncertainty facing us again as we go into the 2014 planting season. A lot of people questioning how timely we're going to be able to plant the 2014 crop. Continued to be pretty cool in some places, where they really haven't had much snow cover, in particular, that we see a lot of pretty deep frost in the ground. And it looks like we're not going to have a really early planting season this year and therefore perhaps not an early harvest. So everything has kind of turned supportive in the corn market in recent weeks.
My, how things have changed since the fall of 2013 when we were considering 2.2 billion bushels as a carryout. Now at 1.5 billion, USDA next week will release its next world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Will they change any numbers in it at this point, the export figures, the ethanol figures?
You know, as you look at consumption to date, it appears to me that ethanol use on a weekly basis is running right in line with the USDA's projection for the year, right at that 5 billion bushel mark. So I would be surprised to see a change there. I think you could argue that they might increase their export projection just a bit based on the sales that we have on the books at this point and perhaps some prospects of picking up business that might have gone to the Ukraine or to South America with their production problems there. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a bump in export projections for the year. The $64,000 question, as always, centers around feed and residual use, and that projection will be strictly a function of the March 1 stocks number. What that number implies about feed and residual use during the second quarter of the year, USDA will have to factor that in then to their projection for the entire year, and that's kind of a flip of a coin whether that's going to be a bullish number or a bearish number in terms of implied usage of corn in the domestic feed market. So that one will have to be revealed in the upcoming stocks report. Wouldn't expect any change next week in anticipation. They'll have to wait on that stocks report. So I would guess next week we'll see a bump up in exports, a slightly smaller ending stocks projection.
And then we'll have to wait for the very end of March, released the last Monday in March, which I do believe is the 31st day of the month. So that'll be interesting. And we get not only the grain stocks report on that day, but we also get the acreage number, at least what producers are considering putting into ground.
Absolutely. That will be the first survey-based indication of plantings for 2014. The market always anticipates that number. We know historically that actual plantings can deviate from those intentions, and they do in most years and in both directions, but it's certainly going to be an important benchmark in terms of what farmers are thinking about more corn or less corn acres in 2014. I think there's general agreement that the intentions will be smaller, but the question is, what's the magnitude of that? That's certainly going to be very important for new crop prices.
Do you consider this a time for either old crop or new crop corn that producers should do anything more with what they've got left in the bin or expect to produce for the coming year? And I'm sure you'll be considering the crop insurance price in that same thought process.
Yeah, I think when you get this kind of strength in the market, I mean, it may be fundamentally based, and I don't think we're really looking at what some people would refer to as a speculative bubble here in corn prices, but we have had a decent run-up in prices, and for those holding old crop inventory, presumably this is what they've been waiting on, is for some price rally, and now that we've gotten that, I think some sales are certainly warranted. It's always a matter of what percentage do you want to hold now into the spring and summer, potentially weather market for corn, but I think the market has to be rewarded to some extent for the rally that we've had on old crop. New crop, I think benchmarking things to the insurance price is useful to do. We have a 462 December futures price for crop insurance. The market is now almost 25 cents above that guarantee, so there is some risk now on the downside for new crop corn. And again, for those that haven't done anything to this point, this is kind of what we've been waiting on, is for some kind of rally to start the pricing of 2014 crop. And I think, again, it's hard to be specific about what percentage folks want to do on new crop, but certainly not a bad place to get started.
Can I bring you back to Ukraine as a speculative market and then the fundamentals in the marketplace? Because Ukraine, I'm quite certain, is only a speculative part of the marketplace at this point. But you're suggesting, I believe, that the fundamentals in the corn market really are supporting much higher levels at where we are now, and that Ukraine might not be playing quite as much of a role as many are thinking it is.
Yeah, I think, you know, the initial gut reaction on Ukraine was buy now and sort it out later. So maybe there is a bit of a speculative price spike involved in old crop corn prices, because you have to kind of keep magnitudes in mind, I think. The Ukraine is a major exporter of corn. USDA had forecast that they would export about 730 million bushels of corn during the current marketing year. Certainly, that's not going to go to zero. So the question is, how much corn will they export, and what will be the timing of that? There's some talk that farmers are reluctant to sell their corn in the Ukraine now as a way to hedge against further developments and higher prices. But bottom line is that corn won't go away. It's still there and will come to market at some point. Will there be interruptions in production of the 2014 crop? Again, reports are pretty spotty, but most are thinking that farmers will head to the field there and get the crop planted. So there may be some disruption and some decline in exports that will shift to other parts of the world. The speculation centers around how much of that will happen.
And I suppose mostly it depends on whether they'll have seed to put in the ground more than anything else.
Yeah, I would assume that's the case, and to what extent that's already been lined up, you would think that they would be in pretty good shape in that regard.
That's one fundamental. And then we have the livestock numbers and the feed and residual figure that you cited that's coming up at the end of the month in the grain stocks report. Can you lay that part of the fundamental demand and the report itself out for me, and what's missing and how it comes and goes into the marketplace and where those numbers have been? And
right. We'd start, I guess, with the December 1 stocks estimate that allowed us to calculate apparent feed and residual use of corn during the first quarter of the marketing year. That stock number was surprisingly small and implied that we fed a record amount of corn during the first quarter of the marketing year, more corn than most people think can be justified based on livestock numbers and feeding of other grains and so on. And so there is some expectation that, as we've seen in recent years, that the March report may, quote-unquote, correct some of that overestimate of feed and residual use in the first quarter. So if that were the case, then the March number would come in higher than anticipated, suggesting that feed and residual use for the first half of the marketing year was at a more normal level. So that's where we stand, is will the March stocks number reflect a reasonable disappearance of corn in the first half of the year, or will it imply something that's too small or too large and lead to speculation about what will the next stocks report show? So once we see that number, then we can make that judgment based on what we've done in the first half of the year, whether the USDA's projection of $5.3 billion for the year is still a reasonable expectation or not.
The capture of that number is fuzzy at best.
It is surveyed because it is pretty much a census of off-farm stocks. They do survey all commercial facilities. It is a sample of farmers to estimate on-farm stocks. But we know that in recent years there's been some issues surrounding those estimates, that they periodically appear to be overestimated
right.
or underestimated, and sometimes subsequent reports reverse those apparent overestimates. Sometimes
right.
they don't.
I'm in the wrong place, because it's the interlocking between that report and the ending stocks figure and the USDA production figure, the final production figure
right.
for the 2014, that makes kind of things shrink and grow in strange ways.
Yeah, it's, you know, the quarterly stocks number are subject to a lot of variation, and if there's been an error in the USDA's estimate of the final crop size for the previous year, then that can sway expectations about what the trade is expecting the stocks report to show, that may or may not be confirmed when the stocks number comes out. So we've just seen some big surprises in those numbers, and a lot of uncertainty, I think, goes into traders' minds as we enter that March 31 date.
So can you take me through the error as it might occur and look, for instance, when the January USDA's final production number comes out, the survey figures for the grain stocks report have to be justified with production figure, and that's where...
Here's conceptually what can happen. Say the USDA has a final production estimate for corn. So based on that final production estimate that's released in January, traders and market participants would do their calculations. How much corn do we think we used, say, during the first quarter of the marketing year? And so what should that show then as December 1 stocks? And so they make that calculation, and then they get a surprise, and the stocks is either bigger or smaller than what their calculations would show. Then there's two ways that difference or that surprise could be explained. One is that actual consumption was either greater or smaller than the market thought. Or secondly, the final production estimate was in error, and so the stocks number presumably reflects what's actually out there. And if the production number was in error, then it says we thought there was corn produced that there wasn't, or we thought there was more corn produced that really was not. And so we get a surprise when the stocks number comes out.
And there's no way to put that in balance at the end of the year, the marketing year, or in September, because there aren't enough figures that are captured from the livestock sector in order to figure out what was fed, unlike the soybean number, which can be debited and credited and put into a balance.
You're exactly right. For soybeans, we can account for almost all of the soybean consumption, either exports or domestic processing. So at the end of the year, when we get a September stocks number, NASS would get that number internally, and they say, wow, that's not consistent with our production estimate and the accounting of use. So they can then sort back through state by state the production numbers, and those are based on samples, so they know that there can be sampling error in that. They would revisit all the FSA acreage data. They would review all their state-by-state yield estimates and say, is there a place we can explain the apparent inconsistency between the accounting use and what the stocks numbers? And in most years, they can find some of that, not always all of it. In the case of corn, there is no accounting of feed use of corn, so there's no methodology for reconciling stocks and consumption.
So back to the livestock number or the consumption feed and residual figure from December 1, how much greater was it than most people or the expectation should have been? How much more was fed, supposedly?
Yeah, I think my recollection is it was perhaps a couple hundred million bushels difference between what people had calculated. But you also have to remember, when the market was guessing what the December 1 stocks number would be, they were also guessing what the final production number was going to be. So they were guessing two things in order to form a forecast about December 1 stock. So when you say, what was the surprise in the stocks number, you first have to correct for what was the surprise in the production number, and then look at the difference that is not explained by the surprise in the production number.
And what figures do you come up with?
Then that's where you get that about a 200 million bushel surprise on the December 1 stocks. But I think this time around, what the market has learned is that let's be a little cautious about how we interpret the size of that surprise, because we have found in the past that sometimes that's reversed in the next stocks report. So let's not get too bulled up.
Yeah, the reaction was muted in January.
I think we did see a nice price reaction, but it was not a limit move. It was not a huge move in the corn market. And I think it was saying, yeah, we're a little surprised here, but maybe this will be verified in March and maybe it won't. Let's wait and see.
Yeah, that would be good news for those numbers as they come out in March, that they may not push the market as fast or hard as they would have in previous years.
That's right. I mean, if you find a small stocks number, then the market can say, you know, that's kind of what we expected to happen because it's reversed what we, I mean, it would be a bigger stocks number. Reversing the small stocks number we saw in December, the market would say, yeah, that's kind of what we thought would happen. But again, it's all going to boil down to magnitudes as well as direction on those stock numbers.
For the corn, an acreage figure that seems to make sense to you for the March 31st?
You know, from everything you hear anecdotally, you would have to say a couple million acres less than we planted last year. That would put you at 93.3, something like that, for corn acres in terms of intentions.
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest is ag economist Daryl Good from the Ewell Vine.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. We're at the end of the first week of March in Argentina and southern Brazil. That's the equivalent of our early September. In this part of South America, the weather's impact on crops will be shifting to harvesting in the coming weeks. It should be noted that farther north in Brazil, the growing season is longer due to being located in more tropical latitudes, so crops there are in various stages. I'll get to that in a moment, but first we'll take a look at Argentina. As mentioned several times previously, the weather has been harsh on crops in Argentina this season. The weather pattern has oscillated between prolonged periods of extreme dryness and extreme wetness. The best weather of the season has probably come in the last couple of weeks, which is too late to help corn, but still a benefit to soybeans. In Argentina, favorably cool weather continued this week, and that will last for at least another week. High temperatures in the 70s and 80s are ideal for filling soybeans. Some needed mostly dry weather this week helped waterlogged fields dry out a bit. A round of showers and thunderstorms is expected Sunday and Monday, which is not helpful. That'll be followed by another stretch of helpful dry weather. Overall, conditions are improving in Argentina as harvest season approaches. Moving north into South Brazil and Paraguay, pockets of dryness since mid-January have likely reduced yields in some areas, but not all areas. In recent weeks, near-average rainfall has occurred. Mostly dry weather is expected through this weekend, followed by the return of periodic thunderstorms early next week. The rain will help the filling of late-planted crops, but will slow early harvesting. Farther north, it's a mixed bag, both in terms of crop development and weather. It does look like that across western areas, and namely we're talking about Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul, wet weather in recent weeks will continue for double crop areas. Late harvesting of first crops and planting of second crops is going slowly, but for second crops already in the ground, the rain is beneficial, and again, we are expecting more rain in the coming week. For Paraná and Sao Paulo, rain has also picked up in recent weeks, and that rain is especially benefiting second crop safrinha corn in Paraná. Finally, an update on drought conditions in and near Minas Gerais. Rain returned last week in neighboring Goiás and has just returned in much of Minas Gerais and Bahia. More showers and thunderstorms are expected across this area in the coming week to ease dryness. That's before a drier weather pattern likely takes hold again later this month. The drought that started in January and has negatively impacted late-planted full-season crops and second-season corn the most. Rain this week will help second-season corn a bit, but it will not have a large impact on Brazil's overall production. That's because less than 5% of the second-season corn grown in Brazil is from the drought-stricken area. And a quick mention on the U.S. Corn Belt. A brief warm-up is expected early next week, but it is likely that cool and occasionally stormy weather will dominate in the coming weeks. And that points to soil temperatures staying cool and fields damp. So early planting is not likely across much of the Corn Belt this year. That's a look at the weather. I'm meteorologist Ed Keyser.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the March 7 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're talking with University of Illinois Ag Economist Daryl Good. Let's turn your attention now to the soybean market. Go through some of the numbers fundamentally that are supporting a marketplace which looks to have a really tight ending stocks at the end of this year.
Right now, soybeans is all about exports. We continue to see very large sales of exports this late in the marketing year. We're still seeing net positive sales on a weekly basis, even though China has announced some cancellations of purchases. And I think part of that is a function of uncertainty about the South American crop, when it will be harvested, and how big is that crop going to be now that they've experienced some really significant weather problems in parts of Brazil in particular. And so here we stand with the numbers through February, showing that we've sold 100 million bushels more soybeans than what the USDA projects for the year, and knowing that we can't do that, we don't have 1.6 billion bushels of soybeans to export. They're just not there. So what's going to happen? We've talked about this before, and it's still an issue. We've sold something that doesn't exist, so they're going to have to be canceled. They're going to have to be rolled to next year. So what's the timing of that? When does it happen? What kind of price does it take to scare folks out of the market? And, you know, we've moved a dollar higher on beans in the last several weeks, just as this drama unfolds about how supply and demand is going to fit for this marketing year.
The market has to do something, and it appears that this price has not done enough yet.
It appears that way, and the, you know, the dilemma is there's limited supply of soybeans, and so we can't reduce our ending stocks much below what the USDA has projected. They projected 150 million bushels. Perhaps you can take that down to 120, so you could pick up 30 million bushels. Maybe we could price some soybeans out of the domestic processing market into the export market. But there's not 100 million bushels there to satisfy what's been sold in the export market. So things are tight in terms of ending stocks. You can't project them much lower, so consumption is going to have to decline, and that means a cancellation of sales or moving into next year. And when is that going to happen, I guess, is what the market is asking right now. And as long as it doesn't happen, then the prices stay very, very strong.
Do you have an answer?
I don't have an answer. You just know that it has to happen. Either that or soybean stocks. The soybean crop was bigger than what we thought. Maybe there's more beans out there than what has been forecast. And that's where maybe the March stocks report will give us some insight of whether the USDA's production number was too high or too low. Right now, even though prices have moved sharply higher, the level of sales, of export sales, implies somebody thinks we have more beans than what has been estimated.
Yeah, and they've moved sharply higher, but the level of sales continue, and they continue at a pretty rapid pace, so they've not slowed down sales. There must be beans there to move.
Well, that's the theory, but we know that that's probably not the case, that we don't have an extra 100 million bushels of soybeans that can be moved into that market.
So at least not yet, not until the grain stocks comes out.
Not until the grain stocks comes out, and if that doesn't show surprisingly large inventories, then the process is going to have to start. And I would guess once the South American harvest gets underway in a big fashion, and we get close to a final estimate of that crop size, that's when it will begin to happen. So sometime in the next 4 to 5 weeks.
Daryl, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd.
Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.